This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, no matter where they might live upon the earth. And certainly, as I always say, this program is vital for all people, primarily because this show and DavidDuke.com focus on the most important issue for people. That's their survival and all the things associated with that, the preservation of their culture, their traditions, their heritage, and their right to control their own affairs, in a sense, and certainly in a real sense of life, their freedom. We don't believe in globalism. We don't believe in colonialism. We don't believe in racial supremacy, that is, one race or one group having supremacy over another, controlling another. We believe that each people has a right to control their own lands and their own heritage. I'm going to continue right away into perhaps one of the most important chapters of my book, Jewish Supremacism, in this audio version of that book. It's chapter 13, and the title of the chapter is The Jewish-Led Invasion. And it deals with the documentation of the fact that Jewish extremists have been the primary source, the primary leaders, in fact, of proposed policies around the world that destroy the ethnic homogeneity or the ethnic unity of nations. While they support, of course, very radically the nation of Israel, which is a nation with a Jewish-only immigration policy, they have consistently worked to break down the ethnic cohesion of other nations. They've seen this as a strategic advantage. And I'll explain this, and you'll see the facts and the evidence in this book, Chapter 13, The Jewish-Led Invasion. So let's get started. I begin with a quote. "Give me your tired, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore." That's by Emma Lazarus. The influx of Europeans into North America led the Indian populations to displacement and eventually to consignation on reservations. Similarly, relentless Jewish immigration into Palestine was against the interests of the Palestinian people, but it was necessary for the Jewish takeover of the region. It laid the foundation of the Zionist state. Any tribe, race, or nation desiring to preserve its culture, group interests, and sovereignty must preserve its predominant status in the geographic region where it dwells. Most nations have had a fundamental understanding of that fact from the time of the earliest civilizations, and every modern nation has sought strict control of its borders and immigration. Most Americans view the Indian historical record of resistance to European colonization as morally justifiable. But in the skewed ethics of today, some find European-American attempts to preserve our unique genes and culture from non-European immigration as morally reprehensible. Nevertheless, despite pervasive propaganda promoting multiculturalism and the media-touted joys of diversity, opinion surveys in America show overwhelming opposition to unrestricted immigration. Similar public sentiment holds true in every European nation, and I would dare say the ethnic majorities of practically every nation on earth have the same viewpoint. It is as natural for people to want to preserve themselves as it is for their desire for food and shelter. It was not until the 1965 Immigration Act that the United States Congress ignored the majority's wishes and began a policy that discriminated against potential European immigrants and encouraged massive non-European immigration. From that time forward, the federal government also showed less willingness to enforce our immigration laws and police our borders. These policies resulted in a flood of non-white immigrants, legal and illegal. Immigration and higher non-white birth rates have transformed the American population from almost 90% European in the early 1960s to less than 70% by the end of the 20th century. The U.S. Census Bureau has predicted that by the middle of the 21st century, well within the lifetime of many reading these words, we will be a minority in the United States. European Americans are already a minority in most of America's major cities and already are outnumbered in California and Texas. Policies similar to those enacted in the United States have introduced large numbers of non-Europeans into Canada, Britain, France, Germany, and a potpourri of alien races into Scandinavia, Spain, and Italy. As I grew racially aware, it was certainly obvious to me that the new immigration policies of the United States and Europe would greatly damage Western societies. Only a short time after the change in immigration policy, crime problems escalated in all of the affected nations. The quality of education suffered, and social welfare problems increased. As this planned racial transformation accelerates, these ills will reach catastrophic proportions. What groups had anything to gain from this demographic Armageddon? The individual foreigners who could benefit from the economic opportunities afforded them by Western societies had little political or economic clout to change those societies while they were outside of the Western nations. As I looked into the American fight over immigration laws during the last 100 years, the driving force behind opening America's borders became evident. It was organized Jewry, personified by the poet Emma Lazarus, whose lines I quoted to begin this chapter. By the time I was a junior in high school, I had become convinced that massive non-European immigration posed the greatest short and long-term threat to America, the America I loved. I saw that the Immigration Act of 1965, unless repealed, would eventually sound the death knell for my country. Much of the material I read pointed to a long history of organized Jewish efforts to radically change America's immigration laws. I contacted Drew Smith, an elderly New Orleans attorney who authored the book The Legacy of the Melting Pot and who had already taught me a lot on the immigration issue. Smith and I met one rainy day after school at the Citizens Council offices. He explained the history of American immigration law. After quoting the Lazarus lines from the base of the Statue of Liberty, he asked me, "Whose interest could have been served in having America flooded with wretched refuse?" He quickly answered his own question. It was in the perceived interests of a cohesive people who use racial solidarity like a weapon they want only for themselves. The efforts to change the American immigration law and ultimately displace the European majority have been led almost exclusively by Jews. Smith explained that Emma Lazarus, like many other immigration activists, was a Jewish partisan who supported the creation of an exclusively Jewish Zionist state in Palestine, but who supported diversity for America. He pointed out to me how Jews such as Lazarus have even changed the modern meaning of the Statue of Liberty. The beautiful jade-colored colossus had no original connection with immigration and predated the Ellis Island Immigration Center. It was a gift from France to commemorate the American Revolution, not to honor the arrival of, quote, wretched refuse on America's shores. It's instructive to note that this beautiful statue of European womanhood faces not to Africa, Asia, or South America, but the land where she was born, France, and Europe herself. Emma Lazarus has been best known for her fulminations against Russia's pogroms following the assassination of Tsar Alexander II in 1881. The irony is rich. A Jewish supremacist dedicated to the creation of an elite Jewish supremacist state in Palestine was anxious to turn America into a refuge for the cast-offs of the world. Drew Smith owned many books on the immigration issue, including some by Jews, in which he had underlined important passages. I borrowed them and passionately delved into them. Jewish organizations such as the American Jewish Congress led and still lead the effort to liberalize American immigration and defeat restrictionist legislation. In 1921, 1924, and 1952, Congress passed legislation that simply attempted to maintain the racial status quo in America. Interestingly enough, even though Anglo-Americans were in a vast majority of the American population, as well as in Congress, they did not attempt to increase their own percentage of the American population to change America into even higher percentages of Europeans. They simply sought to fairly maintain each group's status quo. In the early legislative battles, Jews were the leading advocates of open immigration and vehemently opposed legislation that would maintain America as an ethnically European Christian nation. In the House of Representatives, Adolph Sabath, Samuel Dickstein, and Emanuel Seller led the fight for unrestricted immigration, while in the Senate, Herbert Lehman and in later years Jacob Javits coordinated the effort. In the early struggles, Representative Leavitt clearly outlined the Jewish involvement in remarks before Congress, and I quote, "The instinct for national and race preservation is not to be condemned. No one should be better able to understand the desire of Americans to keep America American than the gentleman from Illinois, Mr. Sabath, who is leading the attack on this measure, or the gentleman from New York, Mr. Dickstein, Mr. Jacobstein, Mr. Seller, Mr. Perlman. They are of the one great historic people who have maintained the identity of their race throughout the centuries because they believe sincerely that they are a chosen people with certain ideals to maintain, and knowing that the loss of racial identity means a change of ideals. That fact should make it easy for them, and the majority of the most active opponents of this measure in the spoken debate to recognize and sympathize with our viewpoint, which is not so extreme as that of their own race, but only demands that the admixture of other people shall be only of such kind and proportions and in such quantities as will not alter racial characteristics more rapidly than there can be assimilation as to the ideas of government as well as of blood." That's from the Congressional Record, April 12, 1924, in the debates on immigration. Sociologist Edward A. Ross, in his influential 1914 book, The Old World and the New, The Significance of Past and Present Immigration to the American People, quotes the famous pro-immigration leader Israel Zangwill as suggesting that America is an ideal place to achieve Jewish interests. Ross then bluntly writes about the Jewish influence, and I quote, "Jews, therefore, have a powerful interest in immigration policy, hence the endeavor of the Jews to control the immigration policy of the United States. Although theirs is but a seventh of our net immigration, they led the fight on the Immigration Commission's bill. The systematic campaign in newspapers and magazines to break down all arguments for restriction and calm nativist fears is waged by and for one race. Hebrew money is behind the National Liberal Immigration League and its numerous publications." Unquote. In 1924, Congressman Knud Wiefald pointed out that communist ties of many of the Jewish immigrants and stated that many Jews have, quote, "no sympathy with our old-time American ideals." Quote, "The leadership of intellectual life in many of its phases has come into the hands of these clever newcomers who have no sympathy with their old-time American ideals, who detect our weaknesses and pander to them and get wealthy through the disservices they render us. Our whole system of amusements has been taken over by men who came here on the crest of the South and Eastern European immigration. They produced our horrible film stories, and they write many of the books we read and edit our magazines and newspapers." The Congressional Record, April 12, 1924. The last important congressional legislation passed to protect the status quo of America was the Walter McCarran Act of 1952. Congressional opposition was led by the Jewish troika of Seller, Javits, and Lehman. Every major Jewish organization, as well as the Communist Party USA, also lined up to oppose it, including the American Jewish Congress, American Jewish Committee, the ADL, the National Council of Jewish Women, and dozens of others. During congressional debate, Francis Walter noted that the only civic organization that opposed the entire bill was the American Jewish Congress. Representative Seller noted that Walter should not have overemphasized, as he did, the people of one particular faith who are opposing the bills. That's the Congressional Record, April 23, 1952. When Jewish Judge Simon Rifkin testified against the bill in joint hearings, he emphasized that in supporting breaking down U.S. immigration law, he represented, quote, the entire body of religious and lay opinion within the Jewish group, religiously speaking, from the extreme right to the extreme left, unquote. It thrilled me as a young man to read the courageous remarks of Mississippi Congressman John Rankin during the debate. Today, such truthful comments by any elected official would bring a torrent of abuse that few could withstand. And I quote, "They whine about discrimination. Do you know who's being discriminated against? The white Christian people of America, like the ones who created this nation. I'm talking about the white Christian people of the North as well as the South. Communism is racial. A racial minority seized control in Russia and in all of her satellite countries such as Poland, Czechoslovakia, and many other countries I could name. They have been run out of practically every country in Europe in the years gone by, and if they keep stirring race trouble in this country and trying to force their communistic program on the Christian people of America, there's no telling what will happen to them here." Congressional Record, April 23, 1952. Finally, in 1965, the goal first advanced by Jewish organizations in the 1880s came to fruition when Congress passed the Immigration Act. It resulted in immigration becoming 90% non-European. America went from an immigration program meant to proportionately be representative to all groups in the United States to one that discriminated against Europeans. As with earlier legislation, Jewish representatives and senators, as well as powerful Jewish lobbying organizations, led the assault. It succeeded because during the 41 years since 1924, Jewish power had increased dramatically in virtually all spheres of American life. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the first part of Chapter 13, the Jewish-led invasion, and we'll continue tomorrow with the second part, the final part of this very important chapter of my book, Jewish Supremacism. It's a vital issue, and Europeans are going to have to understand that the source of the immigration that's come into America and into Europe, it's been orchestrated by the Jewish extremists who've had their own agenda. And of course, the same people have orchestrated the massive immigration that's destroying our ethnic homogeneity, our ethnic cohesiveness in our own particular nations, are the same ethnic minority that have supported the Jews-only immigration policy of Israel. It's a very interesting phenomenon. It's a very hypocritical situation, obviously, but it's something that we must understand and be aware of if we're going to deal with. America today is being conquered. Europe is being conquered in a way, in the same way that they have conquered Palestine, through massive immigration. Immigration basically is a form of ethnic cleansing. And if it continues, naturally Europeans and Americans, we're going to lose the foundations of our society, and our children will be growing up as a minority in a land that whose structure and culture and values will be determined by people other than ourselves. Every people has a right to determine their own heritage and values. It is not supremacy or supremacism or oppression for people to want to maintain their own societies. Certainly, Arabic people in their own countries would object to massive Christian or non-Arabic immigration to the point where they would become a minority in their own cities, their own lands, their culture be changed, their religion be changed. The same is true for Chinese people or Malaysians or any people of the world. And Europeans certainly have that same right. The globalists are trying to destroy this ethnic diversity on the earth. This is the kind of diversity that I believe in, and we believe in here at DavidDuke.com, the idea that we have different cultures and nations upon the earth, different languages and different values and music and every other aspect that makes up the incredible diversity and interest of humanity. And we know that forced massive immigration will destroy that unique identity of peoples. And we believe that the different expressions of mankind are valuable and should be preserved. Well, tomorrow we'll go into the next section of chapter 13, the Jewish-led invasion, the final part of that chapter. And then starting next week, we will begin the last chapter of Jewish supremacism. It's gone pretty fast. Now, I can't do this book, audiobook, for free on the internet, and I can't do the work that I do without the help and assistance of many people around the world who make this work possible. We can't have the great bandwidth that it costs for us to get out things such as these audio books and a tremendous number of audio shows around the world. We can't do the work we're doing without your help, and I hope that those of you listening who like what you hear and who believe that we must stand up for our heritage and our freedom, I hope all of you, every one of you, will take a moment and make a contribution to davidduke.com. Well, help this work. There's many ways you can do so. You can make a contribution. You can buy books and materials. You can, in fact, leave a bequest. You can remember us in your will so that even after you die, your beliefs will be going forward. We need your help, and I want to remind you that without your help, I can't do what I do. Appreciate you very much. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. Thanks. Bye-bye.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.